National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Today, September 23rd, Catholics in America are celebrating the beatification of the first American-born martyr, Father Stanley Rother. A native of Oklahoma, Father Stanley was murdered in 1981 while serving in Guatemala. What can we learn from his life and his martyrdom? Archbishop Paul Coakley of Oklahoma City will tell us. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, Register Senior Editor and also co-host of Register Radio.
Matthew, it is not very often. In fact, in the long history of the Church in North America, I think we've only seen a beatification once on our soil. And so this is an event that is unprecedented. An American priest, Father Stanley Rother, will be beatified, and it is the first time an American-born martyr will be beatified.
That's right, Jeanette. Father Stanley served in Guatemala during a time of great political danger, and he continued to serve there, and in fact even went back, despite the great risks it posed to his safety and ultimately to his life. This is, as you say, one of those great moments for American Catholics.
You know, to learn more about Father Stanley, Matthew spoke with Archbishop Paul Coakley, Archbishop of Oklahoma City, where Father Stanley will be beatified. Here is his interview.
All right. Well, first, Your Excellency, thank you for your gift of time today. I know that preparations are well underway in Oklahoma for the beatification.
They are. They have been underway for years, actually. At least our hope for the past 10 years since Archbishop Beltran introduced the cause in 2007 has anticipated this day, and it's wonderful to have it approaching when we can celebrate his beatification on September 23rd.
So specifically, what's going to be taking place on the 23rd?
On the 23rd of September, we will have over 50 bishops from the United States, from Guatemala, from Rome, and elsewhere, coming to Oklahoma City to celebrate with thousands of the faithful from around the country and even from Guatemala. Clergy, of course, religious women and men, the Mass and Rite of Beatification for Servant of God, Father Stanley Rother. The event will be taking place in a large convention center, which seats well over 10,000 people, and we anticipate a very large crowd, but The rite of beatification itself takes place within the context of the Mass. So that will be the highlight and, of course, the reason for the gathering that day.
Mm-hmm. And significantly, Cardinal Angelo Amato, I believe, will be also attending. Is that correct?
Correct. That's correct. Cardinal Amato is the prefect for the Congregation for the Causes of Saints, and he will be officiating principal celebrant for the Mass and the homilist, and perhaps most importantly, he will be Pope Francis's representative who will read on the Holy Father's behalf the apostolic letter declaring Stanley Rother to be among the blessed.
Now, it's interesting that beatifications are celebrated, are conducted in the diocese in which the new blessed lived, and there is that direct connection. So on the one end, we have the local connection then, but then on the other, with the presence of a representative of the Holy Father, we have that Vatican, that Roman connection. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I believe that it was Pope Benedict who really shifted a location for beatifications from Rome to the local church. But nonetheless, that's the way it has been in recent years. It really does highlight both the local nature of holiness. I mean, God calls people to holiness from where they are, from their homes and families, from their local parishes and churches. But holiness, sanctity, the declaration that names somebody as a blessed or a saint is not merely for the local church. It has universal implications. So I think it's very appropriate that we focus both on the local connection, but also the universal communion of all of the faithful with the Holy Father and in our call to holiness.
Mm-hmm. And that local connection then, obviously Father Stanley was from Oklahoma. Are Oklahomans excited about this?
Oklahomans are very excited. Certainly, it is a story that is of interest well beyond the Catholic Church here in Oklahoma. Our Catholic people are very excited, but many other people are interested as well. We've had wonderful coverage in the local press, radio, newspaper, television coverage. Oklahoma is only about 5 or 6% Catholic, so it's remarkable that a Catholic priest who died 36 years ago is receiving this kind of attention in our community. But the local faithful are thrilled. Father Rother still has family members who are alive, brother and sister, of course, many nieces and nephews, grandnieces and grandnephews. So there's that local connection, that family connection, that parish connection here also. Mm-hmm.
And for those very few people at this point who may not be familiar with Father Rother, what was his story?
Father Rother was a young man raised in Okarchi, Oklahoma, who discerned a call to the priesthood after high school. He was raised on a farm and really didn't anticipate going to seminary during his high school years. The decision came rather late, and consequently, he hadn't really taken the ordinary course of Latin and such that would have prepared him for seminary. When he arrived in seminary, he struggled with Latin, and after noble attempts, he was asked to leave the seminary because he simply couldn't pass the Latin requirement. Bishop Reed of Oklahoma, who had sponsored him as a seminarian, didn't give up on him because Stanley had not given up on his hope to be a priest someday, found him a place at Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland, and he was tutored and was able to pass the Latin and succeed very well in his seminary curriculum. He was ordained a priest in 1963, and 5 years later volunteered for the Oklahoma Mission in Guatemala, which is where he spent the rest of his life. One of the interesting facts about his life and ministry there was this young man who couldn't pass Latin enough to get through seminary on his first attempt, ended up ministering, serving in a foreign country where he had to learn Spanish, but more than Spanish, most of his parishioners spoke a very obscure Mayan dialect called Sutuhil. And he applied himself and became very proficient, and even more than proficient in both of those languages. Was very, very effective as a pastor. He employed his know-how to the life of the mission, helping farmers develop more effective farming techniques in the very rural agrarian society. He helped set up a radio station to use for catechesis, opened a health clinic, helped open a school. So he did many, many things. He, of course, celebrated the sacraments, cared for his people. But he really won the hearts of his people because he spent his life with them, acquired their language, worked alongside them in the fields, taught them, visited their homes, ate their food. He was beloved.
And ultimately died with them.
Ultimately died with them. And then around 1980, the civil unrest in Guatemala found its way to his little village. And because of his efforts on behalf of catechizing the poor local people, the military government felt threatened by that. Those who were sympathetic to the plight of the poor were labeled subversives, painted with the tarred brush of being a communist sympathizer, leftist. Father Rother was not a political animal. He was a pastor. He was a shepherd. But as he faced the threats that his people were facing, he would not back down. When he learned that his name was on a death list, he had to wrestle with the internal conflict of whether to stay in a place of danger or return to the security of ordinary conventional priestly parish ministry in Oklahoma. He came back for a time to Oklahoma, the beginning of 1981, but after a couple of months, he returned time for Holy Week in 1981, and famously had written in the letter, "A shepherd cannot run at the first sign of danger." He realized that his place was with his people, and so he returned for Easter, for Holy Week and Easter in 81, and was killed by assailants who broke into his rectory on July 28th, 1981. And those killers were never identified. Nobody was ever charged with the murder.
And that's significant because here we have not just a beatification, but a beatification for a martyr, which brings its own very unique category, doesn't it?
It does. Father Rother was, of course, the first American, U.S.-born, to be declared a martyr. He was declared a martyr in December by Pope Francis. He was declared a martyr on the classical definition of martyrdom as somebody who died in hatred of the faith, in odium fidei. So that was what had to be demonstrated in the process, that this was not just a botched robbery. This was not a political assassination, some sort of a senseless murder, but this was in fact an act committed in hatred of the Catholic faith and what Father Rother stood for as a priest, as a herald of the gospel. That's why he was declared a martyr, and that's why we're able to celebrate his beatification at this time.
Do you find it striking that the first officially beatified martyr born in the U.S. should be someone who died evangelizing, bringing people Christ in a very far-flung part of the world?
It is. Of course, the Catholic faith took root in Latin America long before it took root here in the United States. But the parish where Father Rother served was an ancient parish. It was built in 1547, but in 400 years had never produced a vocation, and it had been without clergy for much of that time. But when the Oklahoma mission was established, heeding the call of Pope John the 23rd, now St. John the 23rd, to the church in the north, which had greater resources than the church in Central and South America to share those resources. The mission from Oklahoma was entrusted with the parish of Santiago Atitlan and a few other communities associated with that parish. That's where Father Rother and others served. And after Father Rother's death, his parish that had not produced a priestly vocation in 400 years, since then has produced 9 priests from that parish and have 7 more in seminary formation right now. So remarkable verification of Tertullian's statement that the blood of martyrs is the seed of Christians, because the church there has flourished in the last 50 years.
Well, I was just about to quote Tertullian myself. I mean, that is a remarkable testament, isn't it?
It is. It is. In 2001, the local bishop, Bishop of Sololá in Guatemala, thanked the church in Oklahoma for its many years of service, providing clergy, providing funding, providing a lot of material resources that helped sustain and support the mission for all of those years, but indicated that they were now able to staff the parish using native clergy, which was wonderful. It means that that the mission was successful. Not creating a dependency, but really helping establish the church on its own footing in Guatemala, in that diocese.
So a cause for canonization, especially today, has to have that local call. How did this particular cause get started?
You know, the time of Father Rother's death, hundreds if not thousands of people spontaneously turned out in the plaza when they heard that he had been killed during the night. He was esteemed and cherished and loved as a pastor and as a martyr from the very beginning. There was that sense of recognition in the local church there, which was very evident just by the outpouring of love. When the officials from the American consulate went to claim the body of this American who had been murdered, the people would not let them approach and take his body. He was their pastor. He was their shepherd. So as a result, an agreement was worked out between Father Rother's family and the local people and the government officials from the U.S. who were wanting to bring his body home, that his heart would stay in Guatemala, which was, as a certain beautiful truth to it, that he left his heart there because he had given his heart to his people. So he was esteemed as a great witness from the very beginning in Guatemala, certainly regarded as a great champion here in Oklahoma among those who knew him, but he was not nearly as well known in Oklahoma as he was locally during those early years. He was an obscure missionary priest who had gone to Guatemala and spent the rest of his life there. But Archbishop Beltran, who was my predecessor here, says that from the beginning, he was the Bishop of Tulsa at the time of Father Rother's death, eventually came to Oklahoma City. But he says that from the very beginning, there was a strong sense here locally that he had died as a martyr. So finally, Archbishop Beltran, around 2007, requested and received permission for the transfer of jurisdiction over this cause to be shifted from the Diocese of Sololá, where Father Rother served and where he was martyred, to the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City. The process of promoting a cause is an involved process. It's an expensive process for various reasons, not the least of which was economic reasons. The church in Oklahoma was better equipped to advance that cause. So jurisdiction over the cause was shifted to the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City. Archbishop Beltran initiated the cause in 2007, concluded the diocesan phase of the cause in 2010, and then I came at the beginning of 2011 to continue the overseeing the cause during the next phases of it when it had arrived at the Holy See.
Yeah, the positio itself, or the document for determination of heroic virtue and his life. How many pages of documentation were sent to Rome?
Oh, there were cases, literally cases of documentation, thousands and thousands of pages. I don't know, but I'm looking at the positio. It's sitting here on my desk, and the positio is the distillation of all of that documentation. The positio itself is 1,126 pages, so it's a massive amount of documentation that goes into the determination of martyrdom. Now, Father Rother's cause was submitted as that of a martyr, and so consequently, once he was declared a martyr, dispensed with the requirement of a preliminary first miracle to clear the way for his beatification. If somebody is being proposed for beatification on the basis of heroic virtue, but who is not a martyr, then of course a miracle must be verified that has come through the intercession of that servant of God.
Mm-hmm. And Pope Francis gave the designation of martyrdom in 2016, right?
Correct. I believe the official document declaring him a martyr was signed in Rome on December 1st, 2016. We learned of it on December 2nd, 2016.
Well, a beautiful Christmas present for the Archdiocese.
It was, absolutely.
So what are the lessons for Catholics today from the life of someone like Father Rother?
Well, I think one of the things that strikes me about his life is that in many ways he was a very ordinary man. He had ordinary struggles as a young seminarian, for example. You know, he really struggled with his Latin lessons. But he came from a very ordinary Catholic family, German Catholic family. They were a close family. Their Catholic faith was very much the heart of their family life, involved in their parish, hardworking. So he was an ordinary man who was a good steward of the gifts that God gave him. He cultivated those gifts. Those natural talents, they were not necessarily the kind of talents that one would have identified as those of a future saint, but he used the gifts that God gave him faithfully and generously and allowed the Lord to lead him. He said yes to the promptings of grace in his life and was very generous in his response. So, you know, God calls all of us to be holy. All of us are called to sanctity, but the path that each of us walk is uniquely ours.
Mm-hmm. And he's not the first saint or blessed to have struggled with Latin in the seminary.
Exactly. That point is not lost on priests, at least, who know the story of St. John Vianney, the Curia of Ars, who struggled mightily with his lessons and his Latin. So,
and I'm thinking also St. Damien of Molokai.
St. Damien as well, yeah. So many, many current saints once struggled with these ordinary challenges of seminary life.
Now, the beatification is open seating. Are you sending a message? Are you sort of exemplifying sort of the spirit of Father Rother in that?
Well, yes, I hope so. We want everyone to feel welcome to come and to participate and share in this event. Of course, there will be some reserved seating for family members, but for the most part, we want everybody to come. And we have, depending on how the Cox Convention Center can hold approximately 14,000 people. Some of those seats will be behind the stage. There'll be monitors back there. But we don't want people to stay away because they don't have a ticket, and we didn't want to distribute tickets to people who then don't use them. We want to fill the convention center and to have as many people experience and share in the joy of this day as possible. So in that sense, it's for everybody, and we're encouraging everyone to participate.
And you mentioned, too, that the Catholic population is a relatively small one in Oklahoma. But does an event like this, does the life of a martyr and a blessed really demonstrate to everyone in culture the relevance of holiness for today?
It does. That's why I think as the story of Father Rother is told, it has a universal appeal. A few weeks ago, I had a luncheon with some ecumenical interfaith leaders at our Catholic Charities Center here in Oklahoma City. And they had come in order to learn about Father Rother. And there was an extraordinary interest and desire to learn more about him and even to come in to participate in the beatification. So that's certainly true, that there's a universal appeal here, the story of a man of integrity, a man of great generosity, a heroic witness to Christ and to the gospel that cuts across sectarian lines, for sure.
Yeah, and finally, Your Excellency, what spiritual impact has your role in this beatification had on you as a shepherd, but also as a priest?
You know, I've felt a very strong and vivid connection with Father Rother since I was in seminary. I went to Mount St. Mary Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland, for my theology, and when I returned for my second year of theology, Father Rother had just been killed a few weeks before, and that was his alma mater. And so the seminary was abuzz with talk about this heroic alumnus of the Mount. I learned about him at that time, in the summer and fall of 1981. And then later that year, the seminary wanted to honor his memory, so they invited his parents and his sister, who was a religious, Sister Marita, to come to the Mount to allow the seminary to place a plaque in his memory at a spring in a garden that he used to tend as a seminarian. So I met his parents and I met his sister at that time and have always been fascinated by his life, intrigued by his life. I've read every article, everything I could ever find over the many, many years, the subsequent 30 years or so. And so when I received the phone call in the fall of 2010 telling me that I was to be appointed Archbishop of Oklahoma City, I knew that Archbishop Beltran had just concluded the diocesan phase of Father Rother's cause. I really saw it as kind of a providential gift that I would have the opportunity to continue to oversee the promotion of that cause. And the first thing I did, even before the announcement had been made public, I got in the car incognito and made a stealthy trip to Okarchee, Oklahoma, to pray at the grave of Father Rother, to visit his home parish, and to ask for his intercession to assist me in this ministry that I was about to undertake in Oklahoma. So I've felt that very strong connection with him from the start. I suppose it was just his example as a generous, faithful shepherd, a good priest, which is what he was, a good priest who gave the supreme witness of his life for his people.
Well, Your Excellency, we'll leave it there, but be assured that all of us are both celebrating this event and praying for all of you in Oklahoma.
Thank you very much, Matthew. God bless.
EWTN has broadcast the beatification ceremony and mass, and it will be rebroadcast as well. Check our listings for when it's available in your area. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen, our producer Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
In today's world, we have all kinds of misinformation and even disinformation about Christianity, Catholicism, and religion in general. And we need a source that is going to give us direct quotations and authentic news about what is going on in the church.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues.
Hi, this is Joan Lewis in Rome. Thanks for listening to the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Is your marriage in trouble? Before you give up hope, go to helpourmarriage.com and check out a program called Retrovi. It's a French word meaning rediscover, and it could be the key to rebuilding a stable and loving marriage. It starts with a weekend where you and your spouse will learn how to reestablish communication. You'll hear stories of reconciliation and healing from team couples who've experienced the pain of a troubled marriage. Go to helpourmarriage.com for more information on Retrovi.
I've heard the complaint many times that people in ministry should stop talking so much about chastity and just focus on more pressing social justice issues. But anyone who's worked with young people knows better than to make that false distinction. Well-documented studies show that the younger a teenage girl gives up her virginity, the more likely she is to live below the poverty line. Teenage girls who are promiscuous are 6 times more likely to attempt suicide, and boys are 2 times more likely to suffer from depression. 25% of college students graduate with an STD. People who wait until marriage almost double their chance of a happy marriage. And according to a study of 14,000 teens, those who were abstinent in high school were 60% less likely to be expelled, 50% less likely to drop out, and nearly twice as likely to graduate from college. We can't pretend to care about things like justice and poverty if we don't care about the purity of our young people. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.